A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, in black and white, a shield appears with the letters WB and the inscription Warner Brothers Pictures Presents. As a steam train emerges from a tunnel, titles appear. James Cagney as Cody Jarrett and Virginia Mayo as Verna in White Heat. With Edmund O'Brien, Margaret Weicherly, Steve Cochran, John Archer, Wally Cassell, and Fred Clark. This film is described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding from the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Daniel Davis, read by Margot Stage. For more about DBS, call 1-800-333-1203. Now, above a sunny valley, a two-lane road winds through a mountain pass. More titles. Screenplay by Ivan Goff and Ben Roberts, suggested by a story by Virginia Kellogg. Copyright 1949, Warner Brothers Pictures. Music by Max Steiner, produced by Louis F. Edelman, directed by Raoul Walsh. Now a road sign, California State Line. The steam train chugs past rocky hills and trees. A black sedan speeds down a winding road. Four men wearing fedoras ride inside. In the front passenger seat, a scowling man with a craggy face and prominent chin checks his watch. He motions for the driver to speed up. His dark eyes scan the road from beneath shaggy blonde eyebrows as the car races around corners. On the train, a man in a tan hat watches as a porter enters a private compartment. The man follows him, drawing a pistol. A second man, wearing a black hat, pulls on gloves and heads down the hallway. Inside the compartment, the porter slowly raises his hands at gunpoint. The man in the black hat enters, dragging a conductor with him. He shoves the conductor to the floor.
The conductor didn't want to play. How's this guy?
Nice and willing. Stop the train and let us off. When we tell you.
At a railroad crossing, the black sedan lurches to a stop on the tracks. The craggy-faced man and another man get out.
Head, Cotton, when we get the train on the spur, start hopping. Go.
Is okay, you know what to do?
Sure, Cody. First I throw the switch, and then I beat it back.
All right, just do it. Stop the gabbing.
The car pulls away, and Cody runs off. Zucky tries the switch on the tracks, then takes out his pistol. Now, Cody runs up onto a ledge over a tunnel entrance. The train chugs into the tunnel's other end. On board, the crooks guard the porter. The gunman in the black hat checks his watch.
All right, this is where we want off.
The porter grabs a thermos and knocks the first gunman over the head. The other crook fires. He pulls the signal cord. Gun in hand, Cody leaps down off the ledge onto the train. Meanwhile, two of his henchmen run toward the tracks carrying guns and dynamite, then crouch down in the bushes. As Zucky climbs onto the slowing train, Cody moves toward the engineer, pointing a gun at his back.
Coming right here!
The engineer pushes the brake valve and the train's wheels lock.
Get away from those controls!
What's this, a holdup?
No.
Zucky steps behind the controls.
We're just changing engineers.
A lot fancier than my old coal burner on the C&O.
Shut up!
Zucky pulls a lever, and the train rolls forward a few hundred yards. As the locomotive comes to a stop, Cody's henchmen run toward the mail car. One man stuffs dynamite under the car, while another climbs up and smashes a window with his pistol.
Open up and you won't get hurt!
Sounds bad, Cody.
Why don't you give him my address, too?
Two engineers eye each other nervously. At the mail car, the men pack dynamite. Cody watches from the engine as one readies a detonator with a plunger.
Only the treasury stuff!
The henchman pushes down on the plunger. In the engine car, the engineer's eyes follow Cody.
You won't get away with it, Cody.
Cody, huh?
Cody's eyes narrow.
Go get the car started.
Zucky hurries away.
You've got a good memory for names. Too good.
The engineer crumples. Cody takes aim at the other engineer. He falls onto a lever and steam shoots from the train into Zucky's face. Zucky writhes on the ground. Cody rushes forward and pulls back the lever, stopping the steam flow. The crooks leap off the train and gather around Zucky.
Zucky got scalded.
Cody hurries away.
Come on, let's get out of here.
His men glance at each other, then reach for Zucky. Now, a radio announcer.
A week has passed since bandits jumped a mail train coming out of the High Sierra Tunnel and fled with $300,000 in federal currency, leaving four dead. Treasury authorities now believe that the gang has escaped to Arizona, where today...
Now, near a remote cabin, three of Cody's henchmen listen to the sedan's radio.
Characterized the tunnel...
Now we're supposed to be in Arizona.
Any place would be better than this.
Two of them head toward the cabin.
We gotta blow out of here.
Cody calls charging roadblocks unscientific.
It ain't safe having a crackpot giving orders. About time somebody took over.
Who, for instance?
A very good friend of mine.
Me. Where do you want the body sent?
They enter the cabin. The gunman in the black hat glares at Cody as he pulls off his gloves. Cody smirks at him.
Been golfing, Ed?
We got a sack full of dough and we're holed up here like a bunch of gophers. When are we moving out?
Cody's smirk fades.
Maybe tomorrow, maybe in the spring. I'll give it a lot of thought. All right?
Ed drops his gaze and walks away. Grinning, Cody turns and approaches an older woman who stirs a pot.
Smells good, Ma.
If you're getting hungry, I could do with some help, son.
They exchange nods. Cody kicks open a bedroom door. Inside, a round-faced blonde woman lies sleeping.
Werner, help Ma with the groceries.
Her eyes open groggily.
Werner!
She frowns and slowly sits up. Sliding her feet into high heels, she rolls her shapely legs out of bed. She ties a robe over her satin nightgown and trudges wearily out of the bedroom.
Well, if it ain't the sleeping beauty.
What else does a girl do around this bear trap?
There's plenty you can do without wearing out the mattress.
It's the only place I don't freeze. I've been cold for a week, Cody, not even a fire. Who's gonna see a little bit of smoke 100 miles from nowhere?
Help Ma with the grub.
Cody.
A henchman points at the bandaged Zucky.
He's getting worse. He needs a doc.
Cody gives a slight nod.
When the time comes.
Want some coffee, Ed?
Thanks, Verna.
Let him get it himself. My wife don't wait on nobody.
Verna puts down the pot. Ed glowers.
You know something, Verna? If I turn my back long enough for Big Ed to put a hole in it, there'd be a hole in it. Big Ed. Great Big Ed. You know why they call him that? Because his ideas are big. Someday he's gonna get a really big one. About me. And it'll be his last.
Cody smirks icily. He turns and casually picks up a pistol. Suddenly, his face contorts. His eyes closed, he collapses. The accidental gunshot sends the men scurrying. Ma helps Cody to his feet. He staggers across the room, grabbing the wall for support. He stumbles into a bedroom and collapses again. Ma runs in after him.
It's the second one he's had in a month.
He's nuts. Just like his old man.
In the bedroom, Cody clutches his head and throws himself onto the bed. Ma watches anxiously as he pounds his fists. She hurries to him and massages the back of his head and neck.
It's these mountains, Cody. It's not good for you. Cold all the time. You can't breathe there. Let's get out, son.
It's going.
Cody slowly rises. He runs his hand through his dark blonde hair.
It's going?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. It's like having a red-hot buzzsaw inside my head.
He groggily turns to leave. Ma grabs his arm.
No, not yet, son. Don't let him see you like that. Might give some of them ideas.
He turns and sits down on her lap and hugs her tightly.
Always thinking about your Cody, aren't you?
That's right.
She pats his chest comfortingly. Cody struggles to his feet, then slumps onto the bed. He gives her a nod. Ma takes a whiskey bottle from the nightstand and pours him a drink.
Top of the world, son.
Don't know what I'd do without you, Ma.
Cody raises his glass to her and gulps down his whiskey.
Better?
Yeah.
Now go on out. Show him you're all right.
Cody nods. He runs his hands through his hair, then gives Ma an unsteady pat on the arm. He stops before the closed door to straighten his overcoat, then marches out, glaring at his men.
Well, what are you all gaping at?
He turns to Verna.
And I thought I told you to help Ma with the groceries.
The sedan driver comes in.
Hey, Cody, there's a storm coming. And every road's gonna be blocked, the guy said.
What guy?
On the radio.
How long did he give it?
Tonight.
That's just what I've been waiting for. Is everything packed?
We've been packed for a week.
You sure it's safe, Cody?
A storm keeps everybody busy. Now look, clean up this place and clean it up right. And don't leave any calling cards.
He socks the driver.
I told you to keep away from that radio. If that battery is dead, it'll have company.
Later, Cody packs bundles of cash as Verna pulls on white gloves.
It's your suitcase, Cody. Why don't you keep it all?
You're cute. Come here.
She smiles and wraps her arms around his neck.
Why don't you? We could travel, buy things. It's what money's for. I look good in a mink coat, honey.
Mm-hmm. You look good in a shower curtain.
She beams at him and he kisses her neck. Now, one of Cody's men crouches next to Zucky.
We're pals, Cotton. You'll see that I get away all right. See that I get to a dock.
Sure.
All set.
Cody?
Yeah?
I was pretty good back there on the train, huh, Cody? Pretty good for my first job, huh?
Yeah, you were great.
You won't leave me here. You'll take me with you.
We can't take any chance of being picked up with you in the car. We'll send a doc back right away.
You couldn't let me die.
Cody takes Ma's arm as the gang members head for the door. Cotton pauses, then goes out.
Cotton! Cotton! Leave me.
Outside, Ma's beady eyes narrow.
Suppose they find him, Cody. You know how Zucky talks.
He won't talk. Cotton! You meant what you said, Cody, about sending a doc?
Yeah, sure. A specialist. You.
Cotton's face falls.
Yeah, if you're such a pal of his, go back and make it easy for him.
Cody hands him a pistol. Cotton gapes at him, then goes inside.
Rest easy, Ma. We're 300 miles from the tunnel. What do they got? A corpse without a record. Nothing to tie him in with the tunnel job or us.
Inside, Cotton fires into the ceiling.
Don't make a sound, Zucky. It's me, Cotton. Look, I'll try to come back. Get some cigarettes, huh?
Thanks, Cotton. Thanks.
Outside, Ed helps Verna into the back seat of a car while Cody helps Ma into the front. Ed hands a blanket to Verna. Cody grabs the blanket out of her hands. He spreads it over Ma's lap, then shuts the door for her.
Ed, we'll separate. Go east until you hit the highway and double back over the bridge. I stay on dirt roads all the way. You hear?
Cotton comes out and gives the okay sign. Verna purses her pouty lips at Ed, who eyes her from another car. The cars pull away. Cody's black sedan turns right. The other car turns left. Now a sign, Tahoe County Morgue. Inside, a coroner lifts the sheet from a corpse as a policeman and a detective look on.
Hope I didn't get you up here on a wild goose chase, Mr. Evans.
Geese we're looking for are pretty wild.
A couple of hunters found him frozen up in the mountains. We started wondering. Stranger, bullet hole in the roof of the cabin, and particularly the condition of his face. Tell him, Doc.
Despite the third degree burn, the eyebrows and hairline weren't even singed. That means either boiling water or steam.
So we thought of a steam engine.
Good hunch. Get me his clothes.
Ernie.
Another detective.
Get his fingerprints and take a mask of his face.
Here you are, Mr. Evans. Nothing in the pockets but this pack of cigarettes.
Now, inside a high-rise office building, a door reads, U.S. Treasury Department, Los Angeles, Philip Evans. Inside, a thin, balding man looks intently at the square-jawed Evans.
So like you told me, Mr. Evans, I made the rounds for a month. Drifting, kinda. Not too eager. You know, just dropping a word and her ideas that I'm interested in picking up a few hot dollars. Not a bat from the tunnel job showed up.
We haven't buried it in tin cans, Willie. Keep looking.
Okay. I'll go out the back way, if you don't mind. If the boys spotted me coming up here, I'd be in a real jam.
He hurries out as Ernie enters.
You get anything out of Willie?
A blank.
This'll cheer you up, Phil. Spectrograph of some dirt from the tunnel.
Spectrograph of dust deposits taken from the dead man's clothes. There's no doubt about it. They're identical. It all adds up and places our friend in the morgue right smack at the scene of the crime. Looks like we're in business.
Evans reads a message from a teletype machine.
From Washington. Have no fingerprint, record, dead man. That's one I never expected. Dead man, dead end. But prints on cellophane of cigarette package belong Giovanni Cotton Valetti, known member Jared Gang.
He holds a plaster cast of Zucky's face.
I thought you were never gonna talk, baby.
Now cars and buses pass through a busy intersection in a city neighborhood. A sign reads, Milbank Motels, Los Angeles. Reasonable rates by week or month. Now a sedan speeds through the motel's parking lot. Cody is at the wheel. He stops and throws the car into reverse. Scowling, he backs into a carport between two small motel cottages. Cody gets out of the car and hurries to the door of one of the cottages. It won't open. He peers in through the front window. Cody rushes back to the carport, his eyes darting intently. Entering the other cottage, he sees Verna standing on a chair in front of a mirror, admiring herself in a full-length fur.
Where's Ma?
She went to the market.
Which one?
She don't tell me those details. What difference does it make? Which one?
I'll tell you what difference it makes. They've got Zucky in a morgue upstate. The team would have tied him in with us on the tunnel job.
What?
Yeah, all as hot as pistols. I don't know how they did it. Somebody must have tipped them.
There's always somebody tipped them. Never the cops are smart.
We had enough food in the house for a week. What'd she have to go out for?
You like strawberries, don't you? Well, she just had to get some for her boy.
Cody's eyes narrow. He kicks her chair, sending her toppling back onto a sofa. She sits up angrily, then lowers her gaze. Now at an outdoor market, Ma puts a carton of strawberries into her basket. She glances around nervously, then picks up another carton. A man with a thin mustache walks past her. He leaves the market and walks into a nearby phone booth.
Evan speaking.
Her car's parked outside pointing west.
Good. I'll be down there right away.
Now, there'll be a marker on the rear bumper. That's what I thought, Mr. Evans. Where Ma goes, Cody goes.
The agent with a thin mustache leaves the phone booth and walks up to a black sedan parked at the curb. He rests his foot on the car's chrome bumper and leans forward as if to tie his shoe. He pulls out a strip of cloth and tucks it onto the bumper. Later, Evans and Ernie park their unmarked car behind the black sedan. Evans sees the cloth hanging from the sedan's bumper. He sketches on a map, drawing the locations of three cars marked A, B, and C. He speaks into his car phone.
We'll use the ABC method.
I'm B. I'll keep first position behind suspect on Arango Boulevard. 227, you're A.
You drive parallel on Latimer.
Okay.
323, you're C. The same on Fairchild.
Got that?
Okay.
Ma walks out of the market, carrying her basket. Evans nudges Ernie, and they watch as Ma gets into the black sedan and drives away. The T-Men's light-colored car pulls out after her. Ma spots them in a rearview mirror. Inside the unmarked car, Evans speaks into his phone.
Suspect proceeding dead ahead on Arango Boulevard. Approaching Bakeman.
Ma checks her mirror and sees the detective's car still behind her. She makes a right onto a side street.
Suspect turned north on Bakeman. C, pick her up at Fairchild.
A will take your position.
Car C makes a right turn. Ma keeps her beady eyes fixed on the road ahead of her.
Got her. Traveling dead ahead on Bakeman. 20 miles an hour. Suspect turning west on Calhoun.
C, proceed dead ahead.
Take position on the right.
Right.
A, pick her up on
Calhoun.
Roger.
Car A makes a sharp turn. The agent driving follows Ma's black sedan down a suburban street, about five car lengths behind.
Got her. Going due west about 30 miles per hour. Hold the phone. She's turning left on Kling.
Let her go. C, cut over fast to Arango.
Cover her on the left.
Okay.
A, proceed dead ahead. I'll pick her up when she crosses Fairchild.
Ma checks her mirror and sees the agents following her. She passes a driveway just as a station wagon towing a camper pulls out, cutting off the agents. Ernie slams on the brakes.
Get around it!
Ma grins triumphantly as she sees the agent's car blocked. The station wagon backs up to let the T-Man pass.
Hey, C, cut in the Fairchild. I've lost her.
Down there.
Ernie turns sharply. Now, at night, Evans and Ernie drive slowly down a road bordering the Millbank Motels.
Come in, C.
That's a dead spot, Phil.
Oh, it would be. Turn around, we'll go back.
The unmarked vehicle turns into the motel parking lot, then slowly rolls past lit guest cottages. Evans glances out the window. He leans forward and stares intently.
Hold it.
Evans spies the black sedan and the cloth hanging from its bumper. Evans gestures for Ernie to pull around the corner, then takes out his car phone.
Come in, eh? Come in, C. Beat it up the hill and call the others.
You're not going to attack them alone.
I'll just keep an eye on them. Hurry.
Drawing his gun, Evans climbs out. Inside, the Jarretts pack suitcases.
What's the use of having money if you gotta start running every time somebody sees a shadow?
Just a feeling I had, Cody. I could have been wrong.
Your hunches are never wrong, Ma. We leave the sedan. That's the car they've been looking for. Now you bring the bags, and I'll get the coupe.
Wearing a double-breasted pinstriped suit, Cody walks out. He hurries to the coupe and climbs in. Evans comes up behind him, gun drawn.
You're not going anywhere, Jarrett. Put your hands up where I can see them.
As he raises his hands, Cody reaches under the sun visor and pulls out a gun. Evans falls. Verna and Ma hurry outside.
Get those bags in and get in fast.
Evans rolls on the ground, clutching his wounded shoulder. As the coupe speeds away, he picks up his gun and fires. The coupe speeds over a small wooden bridge and races out of sight. Evans stumbles forward and collapses. Motel guests rush from their cottages toward him. Ernie hurries his car across the parking lot, stopping near the wounded Evans.
Down the highway, Ernie!
Ernie nods. He throws the car into gear and screeches out of the parking lot over the wooden bridge. Now, Cody races the car down the highway as Verna looks back nervously. Ma sits between them. She turns and glares at Verna. Ernie chases after them in his unmarked vehicle. Cody fixes his gaze on the road ahead. He turns off the highway, careens through a rotary, and speeds away. Ernie's car falls farther behind. As Cody races down a quiet street past parked cars and houses. Ma turns and glances at him anxiously. Ernie speeds after them. Cody's dark coupe leads him by several hundred yards. The coupe blazes around a street corner. Cody weaves through traffic. Narrowly avoiding a collision, he shoots off the road into the parking lot of a drive-in movie theater. Cody pulls his car up to the theater's admission booth and calmly hands the attendant a bill. He glances back nervously.
Happens every night. Ruins a movie.
Cody nods and drives into the theater. He slowly pulls into the crowded lot and finds a parking space in front of the screen.
Hey, now it's popcorn.
Cody shakes his head. Another attendant attaches a speaker to the inside of the door.
Kill that.
Verna turns off the volume.
This is great. Where do we go after the second feature?
You're staying put. I'm the only one going anyplace.
Where, Cody? I'm
gonna give myself up.
What are you talking about? You haven't a chance. Poor Dave. Where's the gas chamber for sure?
You don't think I'm dumb enough to give myself up to the T-men, do you?
What's the difference? You're walking to the cops and they turn you over.
Remember a guy named Scratch Morton?
Yeah, little guy on the lamp from Illinois. You had a talk with him one night.
That's the one.
I remember, Cody. Knocked over a hotel payroll in Springfield.
The night we pulled the tunnel job.
Uh-huh.
Handy, huh?
Talk plain, son.
I pulled that Springfield heist, not Scratch Morton. I'm going to Illinois and take a state rap. I'll get 2 years at the most.
When you get out, they'll still be waiting for you for the tunnel job.
What tunnel job? While those hoodlums are killing those innocent people on the train, I was pushing in a hotel in Springfield. Couldn't be in both places at once, could I?
Little thing I cooked up before we pulled the tunnel job.
You're the smartest there is, Cody.
Sure, it's smart, but what about me? What do I do for the next 2 years?
Same as you did before he married you.
Verna scowls.
You better not, baby. I'll be back.
I'll be waiting for you, honey. You can trust me.
If the T-men pick you up, you don't know a thing. You haven't seen me in months. And Ma, you do all the talking.
I can handle them.
Verna, you cry a little. Like you're sad.
How are you going to make it to Illinois?
Private plane. Don't worry.
He hands Ma a roll of bills.
Goodbye.
He gives her a peck on the cheek.
Be kind of a break to get rid of me for a while, won't it?
He leans past Ma and kisses Verna.
I'll be around, Cody.
He gets out. A war movie plays on the drive-in screen. Now, Evan's office.
I told you, I was just trying to cheer up Verna. She's been lonesome all this time, missing Cody so much.
Verna sobs. Evans wears a sling on his wounded arm.
Thought it'd make her feel better. That so, Verna?
Yet as soon as you returned to the auto court, you left again. Why?
Because we decided to go to a movie instead.
What theater?
Sunbelt Drive-In.
What picture?
Task Force. Exciting. Verna liked it a lot.
Cody like it?
How could he? I told you, Cody hasn't been in California for months.
I suppose he shot me all the way from another state.
What makes you think he shot you? Lots of people have guns.
I was as close to him as I am to you.
Anybody else see him?
Just you. And his wife.
Of course, being no woman, I wouldn't know much about the law. But I hear you got to have witnesses to make anything stand up in court. You see Cody last night, Verna?
She shakes her head no.
Makes you the only one, Mr. Evans, doesn't it?
Seems to. Cody's been out of California for months. I suppose he couldn't possibly have engineered that train robbery 6 weeks ago.
Mr. Evans, I'm not going to sit here and hear you accuse my boy without proof. Besides, I know my rights. You can't keep us here. You got nothing on us.
All right, Mrs. Jarrett. That'll be all now.
That's better. Come on, Verna. Stop crying. Nobody's going to hurt you.
Verna follows her out of the office. Now, a newspaper headline reads, Cody Jarrett surrenders. Over a large picture of Cody's scowling face is a smaller headline, confesses robbery of Palace Hotel. Now, his arm in a black sling, Evans watches a message come in over the teletype. He clicks his intercom.
Mr. Fallon just arrived from the airport.
Send him right in.
Fallon enters, a confident grin on his long face.
Hello, Phil. How's the arm?
Well, Liv. Hey, you're looking good.
Yeah. It's that prison diet. Great chef in San Quentin. I hated to leave.
You did a whale of a job.
Oh, most talkative little con I ever shared a cell with.
Fallon puts his feet up on the desk and picks up a fishing reel.
Now, what's that? You put it on a pole, wind a spool of silk thread around it, and you hold the pole over the water. Then you sit under a nice, shady tree and relax. After a while, a hungry fish comes along, takes a nip at your hook, and you've got dinner. For the next 2 weeks, I'm not going to think about anything except the eternal struggle between man and the fish. I've been promised a vacation. You remember?
Sorry, Hank, that's out.
Phil, look at me. College degree, lovable personality, and I spend most of my time in prison. An undercover specialist. 8 sentences in 5 years. Dannemora, Sing Sing, Leavenworth. I joined the department to put criminals behind bars, and here I am, stir crazy.
Evans tears a sheet from the teletype.
Read this.
A cigarette holder gripped between his teeth, he hands Fallon a report that reads, Springfield, Illinois. Cody Jarrett confession checks. Will be sentenced on 28th.
Who checks confessions in Springfield? Every rookie in the country knows that Scratch Morton went underground after that hotel job. You're not going to let Jarrett get away with a 2-bit prison stretch.
Maybe.
Maybe. A hoodlum turns himself in on a phony rap and beats the gas chamber.
I'll bet she's thumbing his nose at Uncle Sam right now and loving it. Jarrett outsmarted you. That's just what we want him to think. We're working with the Springfield police. We arranged for the confession to check. So what happens? Jarrett does a stretch in the penitentiary. Casey gets lonely, wants to talk to someone. We're going to let one of our own boys do a stretch. Right in the same cell. Still going fishing, Hank?
Yeah. In what prison?
You'll enjoy the food there. Wonderful chef. Okay. Rested to myself.
Okay. What's the pitch?
You'll be committed to the penitentiary in Illinois. You'll be one of Jarrett's cellmates. Stick with him until you find out where he unloaded $300,000 in federal currency without a single bill showing up. Also, try to learn the identity of the very special fence that engineered this deal.
How does he operate?
Buy stolen money here, 30, 40 cents in the dollar. Peddles it on the European black market for who knows how much. No questions asked. Sweet racket.
In step with the times.
Well, that's your assignment. I wouldn't ask you to do another undercover job, Hank, if we weren't up against it.
Ernie enters.
Hello, Hank. Prison records from Illinois. Your new buddies.
Busy little place, isn't it?
2,700 of the roughest and toughest.
And a few who might recognize you. Let's go to work.
Later, Fallon separates the prison records into piles.
Find another old client?
Yeah, Red Draper. Questioned him in 46 about a warehouse job.
Well, that makes two for transfer. Better run through the arrest once more.
Yeah, let's see. I'll be picked up in a joint known as Tom's Hideaway.
Bill's Hideaway?
Bill's Hideaway. On what seems like an ordinary hood roundup. One of the boys spots me as a Lannister. I make a break for it. When I pick myself off the floor, I'm meek as a baby. How do I get information out to you?
Visiting days.
Oh? Mother again?
Wife this time.
Wife? Oh, fine. Well, one thing though, Phil. This time, get me somebody with a good memory. I had a lot of trouble with my mother in San Quentin.
This time, we'll get your girl in the bureau who's a memory expert.
I'm partial to blondes.
Well, now listen. As soon as I pick her, I'll send you a picture.
Uh-uh. We moved this guy.
Who is he?
Bo Creel. Arrested him 2 years ago.
Evans looks at mugshots of Creel, a tough-looking, acne-scarred man.
Bo Creel. Wait a minute. We don't have to worry about him.
Huh?
Finishes a stretch Saturday. He'll be out before you're sentenced.
Good. Bo Creel would know me in the dark.
This job isn't going to be like any of the others, Hank. You see, there's insanity in the Jarretts. Some of it rubbed off on Cody. His father died in an institution.
I've had a few strange cellmates in my time, but this sounds like the jackpot.
When he was a kid, he used to fake headaches in order to get his mother's attention away from the rest of the family. It worked. As he grew up, the fancied headaches became real until now they tear him to pieces. Any minute, he's apt to crack open at the seams. There goes our case. So he'll be working against time.
Suits me. The quicker the better.
Except that Cody is not an easy guy to get close to in a hurry. The only person he's ever cared about or trusted is his mother. No one else has ever made a dent, not even his wife. His mother's been the prop that's held him up. He's got a fierce, psychopathic devotion for her. All his life, whenever he got in a spot, he just put out his hand and there was Ma Jarrett. Without her, maybe Cody'd Just like his old man.
You mean I'm supposed to take Mama's place?
Never can tell. He might need someone.
I'll practice up in my lullabies. Nothing else here.
Good. Now let's run through your background again.
Born Detroit, March 23rd, 1919. State Reform School, 1934. Vandalism. Arrested, suspicion, grand larceny, Portland.
Now, a courtroom.
Good.
The State of Illinois versus Arthur Cody Jarrett.
Arthur Cody Jarrett, on your own admission, you have been convicted of the robbery of the Palace Hotel on the night of October 12th. And it is now my duty to pronounce sentence. For the crime of grand larceny, you are hereby sentenced to serve not less than 1 and not more than 3 years in the state penitentiary.
The State of Illinois versus Victor Pardo.
Fallon, as Vic Pardo, bumps into Cody.
How is he, Tom?
Cody shoots him a look. Now, the towering walls of a prison. Inside, guards keep watch as inmates mill about the prison yard. Fallon, in a prison uniform, walks slowly through the crowd.
If they get given the orders now, there'll be all kinds of fireworks. He's got plans to make the old Jarrett mob look like a...
Fallon stops by Cody, who talks with a prisoner wearing an earphone.
Can you read him?
Yeah.
The reader squints across the yard.
Parker moves his lips pretty good. It's about Big Ed.
What'd he say?
He's the number one boy now, Parker says. In more ways than one.
What was that, Crack?
I couldn't read him, Cody.
Was that about my wife?
Honest, Cody, he had his mouth covered.
Maybe a kick in the skull would do him some good.
Fallon grabs him.
Chicken coop, Cody. You start anything, you wind up in a hole.
Did I ask you any advice? Look, Pardo, I've been watching you. And up to now, you haven't done anything I can put my finger on. And maybe that's what bothers me. But I don't know you, and what I don't know, I don't trust. To me, you're just a face and a number, and let's keep it that way for now. When I want your help, I'll ask for it.
Have it your way, Cody.
Attention, men. Attention. The following new men report to the dispensary for shots. Abbott, Jordan, Bacon, Pardo, Butler, Jenkins, Jarrett, William.
In the dispensary, Bo Creel swabs the arms of the prisoners in line.
Hughes, Russell.
Keep it moving, boys. No talking.
Well, there ain't Bo Creel. Boys in L.A. had a coming out party that was planned for you a month ago.
Yeah, I was packing and bang, flat on my back with pneumonia. The doc's checking me out today.
Yeah, CNH is.
Hyde, Frank. Keep moving, boys. No talking. Jacoby, George.
All right, move up.
Jarrett, Arthur Cody.
Creel swabs Cody's arm.
I'm leaving tomorrow, Cody. Anything I can do for you on the coast?
Yeah. Look up Big Ed. Tell him I was asking for him.
Johnson! Vic!
Fallon moves down the line. He gapes when he sees Bo Creel.
Holden. John.
Get the lid on.
Coon. Fred.
The line moves, but Fallon hesitates. Parker, behind him, gives him a shove.
Scared, sonny?
Fallon whirls and punches him.
Yeah, break it up, Holden.
Cody and Creel watch them fight.
Who's that reindeer?
Guards jump in and grab Fallon. They wrestle him out of the room.
I didn't do nothing. He's nuts. A couple of months in solitary will cool you off, fucker.
Now, a guard walks past prison cells carrying mail.
Bishop.
At Cody's cell, he hands envelopes to two of Cody's cellmates.
Roddy. Pardo.
I'm awfully sorry, my good man, but Mr. Pardo is still on vacation.
His month's up today.
A letter has lines cut out.
Look at what they left out of this one. That must have been a Lulu before the warden got it.
Hey, Herbert.
Yeah?
Any chance you get, read Pardo, will you?
Why?
Read him.
Maybe on visiting days. That's when he loose enough.
What you got against him, Cody? Pardo's all right. Didn't I check his record up at the dispensary?
That's only a record. What else do we know about him?
Cody takes Pardo's envelope from Herbert, the reader.
Maybe that envelope will tell us something.
Take your order that U.S. mail.
I'm a U.S. citizen, ain't I?
Not lately.
Cody pulls a photo of a woman out of the envelope.
Yeah, wife, eh? Kid don't talk much.
When you're married, you don't get a chance to. Nice.
He leers at the photo of a smiling brunette.
We put it right over here where we can all look at it.
He'll know we've been in his mail.
All right, so he'll know.
Be a nice surprise when he gets out of solitary.
Cody sets up the picture and tosses the envelope onto the top bunk. A guard unlocks the door to Cody's cell, and Fallon steps in.
Hi, kid.
Let me shake the hand of Slug Roy Parker.
Why did you do it, Pardo? You know they got rules in this joint, don't you?
Yeah? Maybe I didn't want to get my shots.
Cody smirks as Fallon saunters past the picture of the brunette. Fallon tosses his jacket onto the top bunk.
I guess his eyes ain't so good after solitary.
All right. What's the gag?
His cellmates grin. Fallon puts his hat on his bunk and notices the envelope. It's addressed to Vic Pardo and stamped Fragile, Photographs. Fallon turns and stares at the picture.
Hey. What's she done to herself? And the best looking blonde I ever saw, and the second my back's turned, she's a brunette. I don't even look like her anymore.
Maybe she's hot.
Yeah, whenever I changed my hair, so did my missus.
Yeah, well, she better be a blonde when I get out of here.
He puts the photo under his pillow and hops onto his bunk. Cody smirks.
Yeah. Too bad your little trick didn't work, Pardo.
Huh?
Doc says you gotta take your shots anyway.
Fallon forces a laugh. Cody picks up a pocket-sized mirror and hands it to Reeder.
Yeah, Betty.
Reeder leans against the bars. He angles the mirror so that he can see Benny in a cell down the hall. His brow furrowed, Reeder stares intently at the mirror as Benny whispers.
Parker's shooting his mouth off again. Told Benny your boys pulled a caper.
How much did they get?
$57,000.
Not bad.
Are you in for any of it?
Full share.
No kidding.
Why not? What's being in here got to do with it? They're still his boys, ain't they? What they get, he gets.
Yeah, Ma sees to that.
Cody's eyes dart from side to side. Now, Ma stands in front of the gang. Ed wears a finely tailored new suit.
Get one thing clear, all of you. Anything we get, Cody's in for his full share. That's how it is. Anyone thinks different? Say so now. Or would you rather wait till Cody gets out? Well, any argument? Head? Cotton? Happy? Ed? How come, Big Ed? You're the one I expected to give trouble.
Fair's fair. We ain't gonna forget Cody after all he did for us.
Cody'll be real grateful to you.
Verna storms off.
Where do you think you're going?
To pick strawberries.
All right, boys, beat it. It's getting late. Head, tell Verna I want her back in here.
Stuffing stacks of cash into their pockets, the gang members file out. Grim-faced, Ma watches them go. Verna stands on the porch, scowling. Ed saunters up next to her.
Seating you, sugar.
You and your big ideas. That's all they are, ideas. You and me belong together, sugar. Just leave it to Big Ed. Well, I'm sick of waiting for you to make your move. You're as scared of Cody as any of them. He's still Mr. Big, in prison or out.
What makes you think so?
You, fair's fair, is it? It's quite a beef you put up about Cody being in on the cut.
See, a guy thinks his pals is taking care of him. He gets kind of careless.
What does that mean?
Alive, Cody gets out in 1-2 years, maybe. Dead, he gets out sooner.
Verna cocks her head and turns to face him.
Dead?
Right now, he's a sitting duck up there in that pen. He's rubbing elbows with a guy that does anything I say.
When, Ed?
When I say so.
He gives her a cocky smirk. Spitting out his gum, he grabs her and kisses her. Ma peers out the living room window, her dark eyes glaring. Now in the prison workshop, a high-ceilinged warehouse filled with industrial equipment, a guard watches the prisoners work. A crane hauls heavy engine parts along the ceiling. On the shop floor, a prisoner walks past Cody.
Where's Pardo?
Cody nods and points to Fallon. The prisoner carries a radio to Fallon's work area.
I know all about radios. Maybe you can fix the wardens.
I'll fix it so it blows up in his face.
Suits me.
As the other inmates concentrate on their work, Parker moves a scrap barrel, positioning it directly under the path of the crane. Fallon watches suspiciously as Parker sits by the crane's control panel. Cody wheels a load of scrap metal over to the barrel and starts unloading it. As Parker pulls a lever, the crane moves forward, carrying a heavy industrial motor across the ceiling of the workshop. The crane slowly glides along a track high above the shop floor. Parker eyes Cody, his hand on a switch. He pulls the switch and the crane stops, the heavy motor swaying as it dangles directly over Cody's head. Fallon glances up and sees the motor hanging in the air. Parker pulls a lever and the motor falls. Fallon dashes across the floor and dives. He pushes Cody out of the way as the motor crashes to the floor.
Come on, back to places. Go ahead. Get out back there. Go ahead. Get out back there.
As Fallon helps Cody to his feet, a guard approaches.
Are you hurt, Jared?
No. Things are getting kind of dull around here anyway.
Back to work. You too, Bardo.
The guard eyes Parker.
The lever slipped.
You can tell that to the warden later.
I saw that just in time.
What do you want, a medal?
You would have looked like that barrel.
You almost walked into it yourself. Why should you care if a guy named Cody Jarrett gets his? If you don't want something.
Okay. Keep your medal.
Come on, break it up. Get going, Jarrett.
Cody has a golf ball-sized bruise on his forehead. Fallon picks up Cody's hat and bows sarcastically. Cody spots Parker at the crane's control panel and coolly strides toward him. Parker sheepishly meets his gaze.
Sorry, Cody. Sorry.
Forget it, Parker. Accidents will happen.
Attention. The following men have visitors. Reynolds, Allen, Jarrett, Kaminsky.
Now, Cody walks into the visitors' area past a wire fence that divides the room. Inmates speak to their visitors through the fence. Cody takes a seat across from Ma.
Hello, Ma.
Cody, you've been hurt.
Oh, it's not just an accident.
You sure?
What kind of question is that? What are you so nervous about? Anything wrong?
Planned it.
Like what?
That's why I come. I know when to tell you. It's Big Ed and Verna. They run out. It's my fault, Cody. I let you down. I said I'd take care of things and I let you down. I saw it coming. I didn't think he'd have the guts.
Forget it, Ma, forget it. If it was in the cards for Big Ed to make his try.
Don't you care?
Sure. What's mine is mine. If I ain't gonna let it make me sick. I'll take care of them when I get out.
That's what I told myself. And I'll help you, Cody, like always. You'll be out soon. Back on top of the world.
When you're around, Ma, nothing can stop me.
That's right, son. Only you gotta be careful. About Big Ed.
I know Big Ed. Right now, he's doing enough worrying for the both of us.
Maybe not.
Man, he'll expect me to come looking for him.
That's what I'm getting at. When you get out of here, he knows his life isn't worth a plug nickel. When a tin horn like that thinks he's big enough to take your place, he's got to feel pretty safe. And now, all of a sudden, he makes his move. Like he was sure you'd never get out of here. Set in a box.
Cody touches his bruised forehead.
I see what you mean.
You said it was an accident.
For a minute I thought it was.
How'd it happen?
A pal of Big Ed's dropped something.
You see, Cody, I was right. He was figuring you'd be dead.
Relax, Ma. I'm still here, ain't I?
If he tried it once, he'll try it again.
I'll still walk out of this joint, and then I'll take care of Big Ed.
Let him live that long? No, Cody. I'll take care of Big Ed.
No, Ma. You won't have a chance.
Anytime I can't handle his kind, I'll know I'm getting old. No one does what he's done to you, son, and gets away with it.
No, Ma. Look, listen to me. You won't have a chance.
I'm going after him, Cody, to keep him from having you knocked off in here.
I'm telling you, don't do it.
Goodbye, Cody.
Ma! Ma! Ma!
Keep your hands off that wire.
Now, in the workshop, Cody slowly walks back to his station, scowling darkly. He stares at the floor distractedly as he pushes a cart filled with barrels. As he approaches the crane control panel, his eyes lift and lock on Parker. Parker flinches, his eyes darting nervously as he meets Cody's gaze.
What's the matter, Parker? I ain't going to do anything. Not now. I'm going to let you stay awake nights, sweat it out. And then when I get ready, good and ready, I'll pay you back.
Cody smirks and pushes his card away.
I'll take care of Biggie. I'll take care of him, Cody. I'll take care of him, Cody. I'll take care of him, Cody.
Cody's vision blurs. All around him, machines grind metal. His eyes close tightly, his face contorting. Biting his lip, he rolls his head and slowly falls to the floor. Cody pulls himself to his knees, then collapses again. He crawls across the floor on his elbows toward a row of workbenches. Fallon drops to his knees and reaches for Cody.
What's the matter, Cody? Oh, my head. Cover for me.
Watch it.
Fallon throws a toolbox onto the floor. He hides Cody under his workbench as a guard approaches.
Fingers are kind of thick today.
The guard leaves.
No doctors.
It's all right now. He's gone. Where's the pain?
Cody points to the back of his head. Fallon massages Cody's head and neck.
Don't let it beat you, Cody. You're a top man, aren't you? Ever since I was a kid, I've been reading about you. Always hoping I could join up with you. You don't want to let a bunch of two-bit mugs see Cody Jarrett down his knees, do you? Oh, come on.
Fallon takes him by the arm and lifts him to his feet. Cody slumps against the workbench, clutching his head in his hands. Fallon watches anxiously as Cody heaves deep breaths, his face a mask of pain. Cody slowly drops his hands and lifts his head. His face relaxes and he nods slowly. He turns to look at Fallon. Their eyes lock. Cody squeezes Fallon's arm, then pats him warmly on the neck as he turns away. Fallon watches him go. He sets his jaw determinedly. Now, inside his darkened cell, Cody stares through the bars as his cellmates sleep in their bunks. He turns and slowly walks to his bunk under Fallon's. As Cody sits down, Fallon lifts his head.
You all right, Cody?
Yeah. Just can't sleep, that's all.
The headache gone? Then why can't you sleep?
Glancing at the others, Cody stands, then leans close to Fallon.
It's Ma. She's walking into trouble.
Anything I can do?
No. Yeah. Maybe there is, kid. Look. For a while, I figured on sitting out this penny ante stretch. Be a kind of vacation. Take the heat off me for another job. Sometimes you make plans, and sometimes they don't work out. Then you gotta get doing. And fast, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So, I got business on the outside.
Across you?
Yeah. Wanna come along?
Maybe I do. Did you tell anybody else?
Cody shakes his head, no. He motions for Fallon to be quiet and moves to the head of the bunk, further from his other cellmates.
Figured on cutting in Tommy Riley.
You cut in one. The first thing you know, you cut in 10. What do you want Riley for?
He's got a gun stashed.
Don't need a gun.
They're not going to open the gates for us.
You think you're the only guy in this parlor that wants out? What do you think I've been dreaming about nights? I got away getting a mile from this joint before anybody knows what hit him.
Without artillery, it can't be done.
No. Listen, I'm a pretty handy fellow with electricity, you remember? Well, I figured a way to fix the generators. You know what that means?
I got a slight idea.
The generators control everything. Searchlights, gun turret, main gate. Who needs artillery? Only, we gotta do it alone.
need a car. My wife's coming tomorrow. We'll set it all up.
Cody stares at the floor for a moment.
All right, kid. It's a deal. And if it works, I'll pay you back.
Maybe you give me that medal, huh?
Solid gold.
They nod. Cody motions for quiet. Fallon nods again and puts his head on his pillow. Cody silently steps to his bunk below Fallon's. He keeps his eye on his sleeping cellmates as he lies down on his side, his eyes wide open. Now, in the visitor's area, Reeder sits near the wire fence. He leans forward toward a man in a suit.
Good news for you, Herbert.
You've had good news for the last 12 years.
I'm working on a plan to get your case reviewed.
Fallon enters. He sits down across from the brunette woman in the photo.
Hello, Marvin.
You're looking well, Vic.
He covers his mouth.
Watch. Say anything you like and make it good. Listen to me carefully.
Divorce? Vic, you can't mean that. Why? What have I done?
It's fine. Jared's getting out of here and I'm going with him.
I know how you feel, Vic, but don't ask me to do anything that'll break my heart.
Might be better for you.
Well, it's my life. Let me decide what to do with it.
Just the two of us. Tell Evans we'll break out Thursday night. Tell him to plan a getaway car with an oscillator. You remember that? With an oscillator.
I'll remember, darling.
Everything clear?
Perfectly clear. You won't be sorry, Vic. When you get out, we'll be happy. I'll see to that.
Nice going. Where'd you learn all that soap opera?
Reeder continues his watch.
How did you know?
And this time I'm going right to the top to get you out. Herbert, are you listening?
Sure, Jerry, sure.
But if that fails, you just have to serve the rest of your term.
Jerry, you couldn't get me out of here if I was pardoned.
Now, Evans' office.
All right, this is the prison. Now, we placed the getaway car in these trees, with the oscillator under its rear axle and hooked up to the battery. Our cars will be parked back here, a mile or so away. One here, the other here. We assume that Jarrett and Hank come out here somewhere. They pile into the getaway car and they're off. You ready, Ernie?
Ready. The transmitter wavelength is 47.1.
Evans adjusts a dial on a receiver.
1. All right, switch it on. Our receivers pick up that sound from the oscillator, which enables us to cross-plot their exact position.
He points to a map.
For example, suppose the impulse received here has a bearing of 210 degrees. This one here reads 45 degrees. We plot them like so. Where the lines cross, that's where they are. Now, it doesn't matter how far they travel. As long as our cars are within receiving distance, we can tell where they are. All right, Ernie, switch it off.
How far is receiving distance?
We had a dry run on a car yesterday. Kept tabs on him for 20 miles.
That little thing?
Well, you could make one out of your bedside radio. Come here, show you how.
Sometime when you've got a week to spare, Ernie will tell you all about electronics. All right, we'll meet at the airport in 40 minutes. Be in Springfield late this afternoon.
Now, the prison cafeteria hall. Armed guards patrol along catwalks as dozens of prisoners come in. They march in orderly lines, filing around the long tables. Each inmate stops in front of a place setting and stands. Cody and Fallon stand facing each other across a table. Fallon glances to his left and right, then looks at Cody.
Tonight.
Cody mouths the word back and they exchange nods. The prisoners take their seats in unison. Cody glances down the table past Tommy Riley, who's seated next to him. His eyes lock onto a heavy-lidded inmate with a receding hairline. Cody looks over at Fallon, who stares down at his plate as he eats, then leans close to Riley.
And that bee fell down there. That bee fell.
And the Coast mob came in today.
Checked him in at 8. Asked him how my mother is.
Riley turns and whispers into the ear of the man next to him. The men pass the message down the table. Leafield listens as the man next to him whispers. He whispers back, and the men pass the message back to Riley. Riley hesitates, then leans next to Cody.
Dead.
Cody's eyes widen, and an angry scowl spreads across his face.
Yeah.
He slowly rises to his feet. Cody picks up his tin cup and smashes it onto the table. Cody climbs up onto the table and stumbles blindly down its length, knocking over plates and trays. He rolls off and knocks a prisoner to the floor. A guard grabs him and Cody punches him in the face. Another guard charges him, hitting him with a nightstick. Cody drops him with a punch. Cody stumbles around and decks another guard, then wheels and decks a fourth guard. Guards hurry across the cafeteria and tackle him. They pick him up and carry him out of the room as he kicks and thrashes wildly. Fallon watches as the guards carry Cody out of the room. The inmates resume their meal. Now, in the prison dispensary, Riley enters carrying a tray.
Special for Jared. Hiya, Doc.
Hi, Riley.
A guard opens the door of the dispensary cell, and Riley carries in the tray. Cody lies in bed, tied in a straitjacket.
Hi, Cody. Brought you some grub. Hot soup made special.
How are you, Vic? Glad to see you, kid. You're a good boy, Vic.
Oh, it's me, Tommy Riley.
Mm-hmm. That's right, Vic. Play it smart. Play it smart. That's the only way it'll work.
Here. Get some of this into you.
Next time you come, bring the gun.
Huh?
I like the way you go about it, Vic.
Bring the gun. Sure you won't try some of this delicious soup?
I'll get it if you take me along, Cody. I don't want any of that slop. Try it on the warden. It's a deal.
Well, if you don't want it, I guess you don't want it. But you ought to keep up your strength, fella.
Yeah. And if the warden don't want it, try it on the governor.
Guess he ain't hungry.
The guard opens the cell door, and Riley carries the tray out. He waits for the guard to let him out of the dispensary.
Dr. Simpson speaking. Oh, yes, Warden. I've just finished my report on Jarrett. Violent, homicidal. He'll probably have recurrent periods of normal behavior, but... Yes, sir, our psychiatrists are coming tonight. They'll commit him to the institution. Yes, Warden, I suggest you prepare the release for him. Thank you, Warden.
Now, a police garage.
Operator all ready, Ernie?
Ready to sing, Phil. Put the getaway car in the trees. We'll pick you up there and take our positions.
Telephone, Mr. Evans.
All right, hold it, boys. Evans speaking.
Hello, Warden. That is bad news. Not altogether a surprise. Thanks for your cooperation anyway, Warden. Say, by the way, tomorrow there'll be a pardon coming through for one of your inmates, Vic Pardo. Rush it through, will you? Thanks. No dice, boys. The party's off. Jarrett's a raving maniac. They've got him in a straitjacket.
Well, it's a good thing for Hank. It happened inside the prison instead of out.
Yeah, that's the only good thing about it. Take the oscillator off the car, Ernie. I'll get the plane tickets for 10 o'clock tonight. You have a car at the hotel to take to the Springfield Airport?
It'll be there, Mr. Evans.
Sorry, boys. They can't all work out.
Inside the prison dispensary cell, psychiatrists sit by Cody's bed.
How would you like a little change of scenery, Cody? Some place where we might be able to cure your headaches. You wouldn't mind a little trip, would you?
Well, might do me some good.
A guard blocks Riley at the door.
Doctor? Not now, Riley.
I want something to eat.
You sent away two meals already.
That's why I'm hungry now.
Hunger's always a hopeful sign.
Dr. Simpson gestures for Riley to come in. Riley kneels near Cody's side and holds out a spoonful of soup.
Nobody feeds Cody, Jarrett. What am I, a kid?
It's all right to remove the straitjacket, Doctor.
I'll do it.
Riley helps Cody sit up and unbuckles the front of his straitjacket. The doctors check their paperwork as Riley unfastens the buckles on the back of Cody's straitjacket.
Got you tied up good.
Riley sneaks a pistol out of his pocket and slips it inside Cody's jacket. Cody stands. As one of the doctors slides the straitjacket off, Cody pulls out the gun.
Examination's over. All right, turn around.
Riley takes the guard's nightstick and knocks him cold.
Now, keep them quiet. Doctor, you're with me.
Cody walks Dr. Simpson out of the cell as Riley guards the others. Cody pushes the doctor to his desk and brandishes his gun.
I want you to make a little phone call for me. And no slip-ups, or you're going to need a doctor.
He shoves his gun against the doctor's neck. Now a guard approaches Fallon and Reeder in their cell.
You're taking a little walk, boys. Doctor wants you in the dispensary.
Fallon and Reeder exchange puzzled glances. They toss down their playing cards and step out the door. The guard walks them down the hall to Parker's cell.
Wait here. Come on, Parker.
Where to?
Dispensary. Special invitation to the doctor.
The guard opens the door and Parker steps out. In the dispensary, Cody shoves Dr. Simpson into the cell.
Here, tie and gag him.
Cody rushes to the dispensary door and waits beside it. The guard follows the prisoners in, and Cody sticks his gun in his back.
Drop that stick. Now! Get in the cell.
Cody walks the guard into the cell and pistol whips him, knocking him cold.
All right. Now you two, come along and bring the tuxedo with you.
The psychiatrists step out, carrying the straitjacket.
Rita, yeah. Cover the outside door.
We'll never make it this way, Cody. We'll never get to the gate.
Who said so?
Why me, Cody? What do you want with me?
You're my pal. I'm taking you with me. Come on.
He waves them all out. Parker stops. Cody shoves him and kicks him out the door.
Don't get me wrong, Cody. I got nothing against you. It was Big Ed. He told me to do it. You wouldn't kill me in cold blood, would you?
No, I'll let you warm up a little.
Clear as the fingerprint that nailed me.
Hey. Now, psycho. Put that silk suit on him.
Me?
Yeah, you.
This don't look so hot, Cody. My way, there wouldn't be no shooting.
Ain't gonna be any my way either. We'll go out of here in a car like gentlemen, on a picnic. They want me to take a little trip. Well, we're gonna take a little trip. Only it better be a quiet one. Come on now, get it.
Reeder wears the straitjacket.
Pick up those hats.
Cody holds the gun at Parker's back as they leave. Now, Reeder steps out a side door. He looks around, then nods to the others. They follow him outside and hurry toward a waiting sedan.
Riley, get those keys.
Cody shoves Parker to the back of the car.
You get in the trunk. Come on, get it open. Get in.
Parker climbs into the trunk.
Riley, you get in the front. Rita, yeah. You get in the back and make like Yoloni. And you drive. Now, you know how jittery I am. Any minute I'm liable to explode. Now, get.
One of the psychiatrists gets into the driver's seat. Riley sits on the floor on the passenger side, and Cody sits on the floor behind the driver, his pistol aimed at the driver's back.
Now, if we don't make it, I got six slugs in this gun, one for each of us.
Riley stares hard at the driver. The car pulls up at the prison gate in front of a guard tower. Cody's eyes flash as he glances at the others.
Dr. Harris. Good night, Doc.
The guard motions, and the gate slowly swings open. Cody keeps his gun pointed at the doctor's back as he drives the sedan out of the prison. Now, Evans rides in the passenger seat of a police car. He picks up the phone.
Hello. Miss Biggie. What? All right, right away. Turn back. Jarrett's busted out.
The police car turns sharply and heads back in the opposite direction.
Black sedan, probably headed southwest. Following are the names of the men who escaped with Cody Jarrett. Thomas Riley, Roy Parker, Michael Curtin, Vic Pardo. Do not shoot unless absolutely necessary. Hostages in car. Do not shoot.
One break for our boy.
What's Hank's procedure now?
He'll stay with Jarrett till he gets what he's after.
Now, in the living room of a farmhouse, Cody, having traded clothes with a psychiatrist, admires himself in a mirror.
I like your tailor. How do you like mine?
The bound and gagged doctors wear prison uniforms. He pushes an elderly couple into the closet.
Vic, what's taking you so long?
Trying to find some more artillery.
Let it ring.
Someone might get suspicious.
Cody tears the phone off the wall. Riley enters carrying groceries. Cody pulls a chicken leg out of a bag.
Come on.
Riley, Reeder, and Fallon follow him out the door. Cody pauses as the others get into a station wagon. Carrying his half-eaten drumstick, he turns and walks to the black sedan. He leans toward the trunk.
How you doing, Parker?
Stuffy in here. I need some air.
Oh, stuffy, huh? I'll give it a layer.
Cody pulls out a pistol and aims it at the trunk. Fallon looks on as Cody fires till he's out of bullets. Cody struts to the station wagon, casually chewing on the chicken leg. He tosses the drumstick on the ground and climbs in the driver's seat. He puts the wood-paneled station wagon in gear and drives away. Now, wind whips through trees outside a dilapidated house. Inside, in a dimly lit living room, a radio blares.
No clue to their movements has been reported since their assault last night on a service station north of Gallup, New Mexico. It is assumed now by federal law enforcement agencies that Jarrett and the other escaped convicts are heading for California. This concludes the nightly news summary from K.
Verna stands in the living room, a look of panic on her face. Ed uses his gun butt to hammer a small bell onto the front door of the house. He opens the door and closes it quickly, causing the bell to ring. Ed saunters across the room. Verna's eyes are wide with fear.
Did you check the windows?
She stares ahead, wide-eyed.
I said, did you check the windows?
Ed, let's get out of here.
Now, take it easy, baby. We're ready for him when he comes.
I can't stand another night, Ed. Listening. Going crazy. It ain't just like waiting for some human being who wants to kill you. Cody ain't human. Fill him full of lead and he'll still come at you.
Plug him and he drops, same as anybody else.
The boys didn't think so. Why did they beat it down to San Radu?
Because they know this is between me and Cody. I'll be back when it's over.
You'll be dead.
Ed pours himself a drink and swaggers toward her.
Maybe so. But the time comes when a man's got to stop running away and face things. Or else go on running for good.
All right, throw your life away. Stay here and shoot it out. Me, I'm going. I want to live.
Cody might have some ideas about that.
I'll go someplace he'll never find me.
The world ain't big enough, sugar. Not when he finds out what you did to his ma.
Verna gapes at him. Her eyes wide, she walks to him. Ed pulls out a cigarette and puts it in his mouth.
You tell him?
If you run out on me.
He strikes a match and lights his cigarette.
Why not?
But I only did it for you, Ed. She had you covered.
Cody still ain't going to like to hear that she got it in the back. Feel more like staying now?
Verna stares at him, her mouth gaping open and pouty lips trembling. Her wide eyes dart nervously. She turns from him and slowly walks toward the stairs. Later, Ed walks upstairs. In her room, Verna lies in bed, wide awake, listening to his footsteps. Ed opens the door to his room and goes in. Verna's satiny nightgown rises and falls as she gasps anxiously. She slowly raises her head. Verna glances around nervously. She sits up. Later, the door to her bedroom swings open and she steps out. Carrying her high-heeled shoes in her hand, she carefully pulls the door closed behind her. With a glance at Ed's room, she walks silently to the top of the staircase. She hurries down the stairs in her stocking feet. At the bottom of the stairs, she pulls on her pumps and hurries to the front door of the house. She grabs the door handle, then notices the bell hanging there. She runs across the darkened living room to a window and throws it open. Verna drops herself through the window onto the ground below. She runs across the driveway to an old barn. Verna throws open one side of the barn door and props it open with a board. She throws the other side of the door open and hurries inside. She runs to the door of a car parked there. A man jumps out of the darkness and clamps his hand over her mouth. It's Cody.
I said I'd be back. Now tell me you're glad to see me. Only say it low, so nobody can hear.
He grabs her by the throat.
Oh, Cody. I'm so glad to see you. I've been praying you'd come back. I couldn't stand any longer. I was running away.
From Big Ed?
Yeah.
What's the matter? Don't you like him?
No, no.
Maybe you shouldn't have teamed up with him in the first place, huh?
I couldn't help it, Cody. He said if I didn't go away with him, he'd have you killed. All I wanted was for you to come back. That's the truth. I love you, Cody. I love you.
Let Ma die?
No.
Yeah. Didn't you raise a finger to help her? You just stood there and watched Big Ed kill her.
I tell you, you got it wrong, Cody.
Maybe you even thought it was funny. An old woman taking on a guy like that, huh?
No. I tried to warn her, but he caught me and beat me. Then when Ma came, he was waiting for her, and he... I can't tell you.
Help me.
He got her in the back.
Cody's face falls. He loosens his grip on her throat.
Is he in there now?
Yeah, but you gotta be careful, Cody. He's got the house rigged up like a trap. He can't get in unless I tell you how.
He shoves her, spinning her around. Verna walks out of the barn and Cody follows. In his room, Ed pulls the covers of his bed over a pile of pillows and blankets, arranged to look like a sleeping man. He turns down the lamplight and walks to the foot of the bed. He glances at the blankets piled on the bed, then takes his gun out of his coat pocket and checks the bullet chamber. He sits in a chair facing the door, his gun in his hand. Downstairs, Verna stands next to the living room window as Cody crawls in. He nods and she walks across the room. He holds the sleeve of her coat as he follows, his pistol drawn. She stops at the foot of the stairs. Cody backs slowly toward the front door of the house. He reaches up and rings the bell on the door. Cody walks toward Verna, his gun ready. She backs away from him, then walks up the stairs. Ed stands next to the door of his room, his gun drawn. As Verna comes in, he hides behind the door. She walks to the bed and nudges the pile of blankets.
Ed!
Stay where you are. What was that bell downstairs?
It was me, Ed.
What are you doing down there?
I couldn't go through with it. I tried, but I couldn't.
Talk sense.
I was going to take the car and beat it. I was scared. But I don't want to go anymore.
A leering grin spreads over his face.
You're my honey.
He pulls her face to his and kisses her neck. She grimaces uncomfortably. The side door to Ed's room slowly opens.
Still got nerves?
She sees Cody's face glaring through the cracked door.
Please, Ed. I feel like a drink.
She pushes away from him and pours herself a drink. As Ed wraps his arms around her, Cody silently moves behind him, gun drawn.
Fix me one, too.
Here.
She hands him her glass and hurries away. Ed turns, then freezes. Cody's eyes gleam as he stares. Ed dashes for the door and pulls it shut behind him. Cody fires through the door. On the other side, Ed collapses and falls down the stairs. Cody races to the top of the staircase and smiles slightly as he looks down. Verna follows. Cody smirks and gestures toward the stairs. She gapes at him. He offers her his arm. Verna forces a smile and takes it. They start down the stairs. Fallon, Riley, and Rita rush in the front door. They look on as Cody and Verna stand over Ed's body on the stairs.
Catch!
Cody kicks the body down the stairs. Cody grins proudly. Later, in the living room, the gang gathers around the table. They look on apprehensively as Cody tosses nuts at a small ceramic statue.
Listen, Cody. Ed said this joint was a cinch. Good for 50 grand.
Oh, Big Ed. Never heard of him. Go on. Well, the way we had it figured, Cody,
we pile out of the cars here, and we slug the guards, and we grab the payroll here. Blast our way out.
It'll all take 50 seconds.
They got cars, and they follow you.
That's where we use the gas truck. I stall it right in the gates. And when we beat it in the getaway cars, I got the truck keys in my pocket.
Now, where do you get the gas truck?
We got one stashed behind a barn. Bought it with our own dough. 12 grand.
You bought a gas truck?
Yeah.
What's the matter? Forget how to steal one?
Maybe it ain't so bad, Cody. 12 grand gets you 50.
Fence to 50 and you get 20. Then what are you going to do with that? Buy two more gas trucks?
Joy McGrath's got the serial number of every bill. Any guy says he can fence 50 grand if it's crazy.
The trader ain't crazy.
The trader? Who's he?
My manager, kid. Come on, let's get a look at that $12,000 doll.
Oh, Cody. My radio ain't working again.
Oh, no. What do you want for it? Unemployment insurance?
Can't I go down to San Bernardino and get it fixed?
Nobody leaves here unless I say so. Now, you...
Verna flinches as he raises his hand.
Hello, baby. Am I going to hurt you? Wouldn't read your comic books. Good girl.
Verna watches the gang members leave. She picks up Cody's bag of nuts and angrily hurls it at the ceramic statue. Now, Fallon and Cody walk together.
Hey, this fella you call a traitor. Can you trust him?
Why?
Well, I wouldn't like to see my share of any caper being handed to some guy who might disappear with it.
Suspicious, ain't you?
Oh, just careful.
Well, you don't have to worry about the traitor. Pays off on a spot, nice clean bills.
Huh? Where does he get rid of the stuff?
Ships to Europe. Collects both ends.
Oh, smart operator, huh?
Well, you didn't see any of that dope in the tunnel job popping up, did you?
Uh-huh. I like him better now.
They walk behind the barn where the rest of the gang pulls a tarp off of a 5,000-gallon tanker truck.
Not bad. Maybe a 12 grand don't go down a drain after all.
Cody opens a door under the truck's tank.
Hey, Hat.
Yeah?
You're a pretty good man with a blowtorch. You suppose you could cut a hole in here, put it into the tank?
Yeah, sure.
We're back in business, boys. We're back in business. And not Big Ed's way either. And not for 50 grand. First, a question. Supposing you want to push in a place like Fort Knox and grab yourself a couple of tons of gold, what's the toughest thing about a job like that?
Getting inside the joint.
A silver dollar for the gentleman on the balcony. Right on a button, getting in. Which brings me to a story Ma used to tell me when I was a kid. A story about a horse. Way back, there was a whole army trying to knock over a place called Troy. And getting nowhere fast. Couldn't even put a dent in the walls. And one morning, the people of Troy wake up, look over the walls, and the attacking army's disappeared. Men, boats, the works. Taking a powder. But they left one thing after them. A great big wooden horse. And according to Ma...
Later, Cody's men hang out by the truck. A wood-paneled station wagon rolls up to the house. Reader honks the truck's horn. A man in a fishing hat gets out of the station wagon.
Hello there. I was wondering if I could use your telephone.
There ain't a phone here for 5 miles.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Good morning.
Hello. Lost your way, mister?
No, I wanted to call my office, but these gentlemen say you don't have a phone here.
Well, they wouldn't know. There's one in the house. I'll show you where it is.
Thank you very much.
Cody leads the man inside. The gang looks on.
Here's a call. It's going to cost more than a nickel.
Looks like Big Ed's going to have company, huh?
Yeah.
And we got a new station wagon.
Fallon furrows his brow. Inside the house, Cody points the man into the living room. He takes the man's fishing creel and they shake hands. Cody motions toward a table and they sit.
How's fishing?
Fine, Cody. Good catch.
You like the truck idea, huh?
It's admirable. We might all profit by a closer study of classical literature.
The man takes out a map and spreads it over the table.
Oh, chemical plant. Guess that's Long Beach way.
That's close enough for now. You know the way I work, Cody. I must ask that you don't insist on knowing the exact location until you've reached the rendezvous.
That's all right. Now, the only thing that matters is,
How much dough this joint has in the kitty?
$426,000 will be placed in their safe before closing time tomorrow, to be distributed to deserving employees the following morning. Provided there's no unforeseen accident, of course.
Like me and my boy?
Exactly.
Cody's men watch the house.
What are they doing, dancing?
Maybe they found they went to school together.
Say, maybe they're buddies after all. Well, something funny's going on there.
Fallon walks toward the house.
I've had my eye on this place for several months.
And now, these checking gates. That means a pass for the driver. Identity cards and stuff. We're all hot.
Your truck will be driven past these checkers by an ex-convict of my acquaintance. He's now leading a scrupulously honest life as a truck driver for this very firm.
Smooth.
Fallon comes in, frowning suspiciously.
Sorry to bust in, Cody. We're finished out there. Thought you might want to check.
I'll be right out.
Okay. Hey, you having much luck, mister?
I haven't started yet. I'm just on my way.
Oh? You done much fishing up here?
Oh, every year.
Yeah? What are you trying for?
Bass.
Fallon pulls out a gun.
This guy's a phony, Cody.
I beg your pardon.
This is trout country. There ain't bass for 100 miles. What's so funny?
You're right on your toes, kid. Bass. He got you, didn't he? Trader, this is the kid I've been telling you about. Meet Vic Pardo.
Hello.
Glad to know you, Mr.
Forgive me,
Well, you can forget that. Vic's my partner, 50-50.
Cody Jarrett going 50-50.
I split even with Ma, didn't I?
I see. My name's Daniel Winston, San Diego. Securities.
Glad to know you, Mr. Winston.
Sit down.
Fallon puts his gun in his pocket and sits. Later, at night, Fallon leaves the house. He runs toward the barn. Happy jumps out in front of him, his gun drawn.
Hold it.
Where you going, Pardo?
Fallon grabs Happy's wrist and wrestles the gun away from him. He chops him in the face and throws him to the ground. Fallon blocks Happy's wild haymaker and flips him onto his back. Happy gets up and tries another punch, and Fallon flips him again. Fallon jumps on him, grabs his throat, then freezes. Cody walks slowly toward him.
What's doing, kid?
Tell you gorillas I don't like being pushed around.
My orders was nobody was to leave.
Well, that might go for hoods like him. When I got a reason to leave, I leave.
Nobody has any reasons I don't know about.
He jumped me, Cody.
Get back on that job. That was pretty fancy wrestling, kid. Where'd you learn it?
In the army.
You're a liar. They don't take cons in the army.
When the war broke out, I didn't have any record except kid stuff.
What were you doing just now, soldier? Going over the hill?
No. I figured maybe I'd run into L.A. Be back before anyone knew.
Cody grabs him.
What doing in L.A.?
My wife. She don't know where I am. When we crashed out, I didn't leave no forwarding address.
Mm-hmm.
It's the truth, Cody.
Why didn't you ask me?
I figured you might get sore.
So you took off on your own, huh?
I haven't seen her in a long time. I'm human, you know, like everyone else.
All right, kid. All right. You're just lonesome. Lonesome. Like me.
You? What about...
You mean Verna?
Yeah.
All I ever had was Ma. Now? Your mother alive?
No. She died before I even knew her.
I was just walking around out there talking to mine. That sound funny to you?
Oh, no.
Oh. Some might think so. Well, my old lady never had anything. Always on the run, always on the move. Some life. First it was my old man, died kicking and screaming in a nut house. Then my brother. And after that was taking care of me. Always trying to put me on top. Top of the world, she used to say. And then, times when I'd be losing my grip, there she'd be right behind me. Push me back up again. And now?
Well, anyway, she quit running, Cody.
Yeah, quit running. That was a good feeling out there. Talking to her.
Just me and Mom. Good feeling. Liked it. Maybe I am nuts. Let's go and have a drink.
Inside, Verna sneaks a drink of whiskey. She hands glasses to Cody and Fallon.
Tell you what, I've got an idea. We'll pick up your wife after the job tomorrow. And we'll all take a little trip, just the four of us.
No kidding, Cody. Oh, that sounds great to me.
You mean it, honey? We could have fun, live big. Money's just paper if you don't spend it.
That's an idea.
It's a good idea. Europe, maybe. Paris. Rubbing shoulders with the best of them. How'd you do, Countess? Sable coats. Jewels just dripping from my fingers. Oh, I'd knock their eyes out, Cody. You'd be real proud of me.
He pulls her onto his lap.
Don't go flipping your lid.
He ain't thought of a vacation in years, Vic. Don't let him forget it.
Here's to us. Top of the world.
Fallon raises his glass. Verna drinks from Cody's.
How's the radio coming, Verna?
Crystal said it'd play better.
Yeah? Maybe I could fix it for you.
I wish you would, Vic. I'm dead without music.
We'll get a new one.
Oh, I don't mind fixing it, Cody. Keep me busy. I can't sleep anyhow.
Anything you say, kid.
I was just gonna throw it away.
Well, I'm not making any promises now, remember.
Well, I think we better hit the hay, Duchess.
Come on. We got a heavy day tomorrow.
Vic!
Verna bounces on the chair and hops onto Cody's back.
See you in the morning.
Right.
Verna hangs on to Cody, piggyback. He points at the whiskey bottle.
Grab the brass ring.
She grabs the bottle and they go upstairs. Later, Fallon works on the radio set with a screwdriver. He twists two wires together and touches them to the radio. The wires spark. Later, Fallon lies underneath the gas truck, attaching the radio to its tank. Gang members load supplies onto the big 18-wheel tanker. Cody walks to the back end of the truck, where Fallon's legs stick out. Cody kicks Fallon's leg.
What are you doing?
We're on our way.
You gotta have a chain bouncing the ground, get rid of electricity.
That's only when you got gasoline or chemicals slapping around inside.
You wanna have some traffic cop think you got a load of something else?
That's using your head, kid. All right, snap it up.
Fallon smiles. He attaches the radio to the tanker with a wire.
You all know what you're to do. And you know where the rendezvous is. We're to pick up our driver there at 5 o'clock, and we'll be at the plant right after the day shift is checked off. Now, Vic and Tommy, we go in the truck, and the rest of you go with Vern in the sedan. And baby, don't get picked up for speeding. But get him there, huh?
Don't worry, honey. I'll get him there.
She wraps her arms around him and kisses him. Cody pats her fondly on the back and climbs into the front of the tanker truck between Riley and Fallon. Verna, wearing jewelry and a fur coat, gets into the sedan with the rest of the gang. The car pulls away and the big tanker truck follows. Now the truck rolls through the countryside on a two-lane road. White steam pours from its engine.
$12,000, and she's getting ready to blow up in your face.
Might be a cracked radiator. We better stop somewhere.
The gas station down the hill, Cody.
Well, pull in and watch yourself.
Riley guides the truck into a service station and stops in front of the gas pumps. A uniformed attendant walks up to the cab.
Fill her up?
Put water, Bob. Check that radiator.
Okay.
The attendant pulls a hose to the truck. Fallon gets out.
You got a washroom, mister?
Yeah, cleanest in the West.
Fallon walks away. The attendant takes off the radiator cap and looks inside.
Dry as a bone.
Fallon enters the men's room and hurries to the sink. He picks up a piece of soap and uses it to write on the mirror. He writes the words, "Attention Police," in big letters. Outside, the attendant fills the truck's radiator with water. Cody nods to Riley.
Go get Vic. Hurry up.
Riley climbs out of the truck and walks towards the men's room, where Fallon writes on the mirror. Fallon pulls off his coat and hangs it over the mirror just before Riley opens the door.
Cody says to hurry up.
All right.
Fallon rinses his hands as Riley leaves. He pulls his coat down and runs out. His message reads, "Attention, police, call Evans, Treasury, radio signal, Fallon." He sprints to the truck.
Hey, I thought you said cleanest in the West.
You ever seen a cleaner one, mister?
Well, the mirror's so dirty you can see double.
What?
Fallon climbs into the truck. Riley starts the engine and drives away. The attendant watches them go.
Wise guys. Didn't even buy gas.
Later, on a dirt road near some cabins in a wooded clearing, Verna sits in the sedan, smacking gum and checking her hair with her makeup mirror. The big 18-wheeler rumbles down the road. The gang members watch as it rolls to a stop next to the sedan. Riley and Cody jump out.
Into the wooden horse, boys.
Cody's men line up near the truck.
Where do we go, traitor?
Winston, the trader, hands him a sheet of paper.
You should be back in about 3 hours. I'll wait.
We'll be here. Where's the driver?
He's having a cup of coffee. He'll be right out.
Bo Creel steps out of a cabin.
Well, Bo, I heard you're on a straight now, driving a truck for a living.
Tonight I hand in my resignation.
You better get going, Cody. Good luck.
Cody's men crawl into the truck's tank. Creel shuts the door behind them as Cody shows Verna the directions.
Got it? And when you get to the plant, park across the street. If there's any trouble, give us the horn hard.
Verna spits out her gum and gives him a kiss. He pats her cheek. Cody hurries back to the truck.
How is it in there?
Can't breathe good, otherwise fine.
Stop breathing. There's a button up in the cab. Press it once if trouble shows and three times if all clear.
Okay, I got it.
Cody climbs into the truck's tank. He eyes the rest of the gang, crouched on the floor and hunched against the curved walls of the tank. Creel shuts the door and heads to the front of the truck. In the tank, Cody and his men sway with the rumbling truck's motion. Now at the service station, the attendant wipes a windshield. A thin man with a mustache walks up behind him.
Somebody's ribbing you, Russ. Take a slant at the mirror in your washroom.
Now, an L.A. policeman on the phone with Evans.
Radio signal, Fallon. Do you know what that means, sir?
You bet I know what it means. It's Hank. Call the FCC. Get every direction finder car they've got. Ask them to clear the air. Now listen.
Now, an unmarked police car drives down a city street. A ring-shaped antenna on its roof turns from side to side. In the back seat, Ernie wears headphones as he adjusts a dial controlling the antenna. Evans rides in the passenger seat taking notes. The gas truck moves through the city, the radio underneath humming. Ernie fine-tunes the dial, zeroing in on the frequency.
Got him. This is Car A at La Canada, Verdugo. Receiving signal, 105 degrees. We'll repeat, 105 degrees.
Check. Come in, Car B.
Car B bearing 284 degrees.
At the police station, officers plot intersecting lines on a wall map of the city streets.
Wayne in Atlantic, Alhambra, general direction southwest.
Wayne in Atlantic, in Alhambra, general direction southwest.
Check. Source of signal, Wayne in Atlantic, in Alhambra, general direction southwest.
Head southwest. Have Car B head southeast.
Now, in a montage, the tanker makes its way through the city, its radio humming. Unmarked police cars continue their patrol as their roof antennas rotate. At the station, officers triangulate positions on the wall map as dispatchers relay information. In Evans' car, Ernie clicks on the microphone.
Car A, at Western and Slauson, bearing 158 degrees.
Car B, Atlantic and Telegraph Road, bearing 235 degrees.
At the police station, officers trace more lines on the wall map. The lines intersect.
Imperial and Figueroa.
Source of signal, Imperial and Figueroa.
Our view shifts from the tanker truck to the unmarked cars and then to the police station. Inside Car A, Evans studies the map.
That looks like the Long Beach area.
Car A at Rosecrans and Western, bearing 156 degrees.
Car B at Atlantic and Compton,
bearing 244 degrees.
The officers at the police station wall map plot the course of Cody's truck.
Source of signal, 198th and Figueroa.
198th and Figueroa.
The big 18-wheel tanker rolls toward a massive chemical plant. Acres of smokestacks, electrical towers, and pipelines stretch toward the distance. Inside the tank, Cody straightens as the tanker comes to a halt at the gate. A uniformed guard approaches the truck. Creel holds out an ID card. The guard glances at the card and waves his arm toward the gatehouse. A second guard throws a switch and the plant's gate slowly rolls open. Inside the tank, the men look to Cody as a signal light flashes three times. Cody takes a deep breath as the truck rumbles forward through the gate. White smoke pours from smokestacks as the gate slowly rolls shut. The tanker truck rolls past pipelines. Inside the tank, Cody's eyes dart from side to side. The truck comes to a stop outside a brick office building. Creel gets out and hurries to the tank's door. He opens the door and Cody crawls out. The rest of the gang follows. Cody gestures toward the brick building and his men follow him to the door. Creel works on the lock.
Cover the back.
Cotton runs off as the others carry a gas torch into the building. Now, inside Car A, Ernie clicks on his microphone.
Car A at 166 Western, bearing 138 degrees.
Car B, Alameda and Artesia, bearing 256 degrees.
At the police station, an officer draws a line on the map. It intersects two other lines.
Same as before, 198th and Figueroa.
They must have stopped 198th and Figueroa.
Check. 198th and Figueroa.
That's it. Send it a call. All cars proceed 198th and Figueroa.
Inside the chemical plant office building, Cody and his men follow Creel down a hallway. They wait as Creel knocks on a glass door marked accounting department. Inside, a guard sits with his feet on a desk. He gets up and moves to the door carrying a nightstick. Creel holds out an ID card. The guard glances at it and opens the door.
Drop the gun.
Creel points a pistol at the guard.
Now turn around.
He pistol whips the guard, who sinks to the floor. Around the corner, Cody and his men exchange looks. Creel waves them forward, and they hurry toward the accounting department. The men rush inside. Just as Fallon enters, Cody motions Creel across the room. Fallon guards the door. Several of the men kneel in front of a large wall safe and set up the gas torch. Creel stands lookout by a window, his back to the others. Now, police cruisers, unmarked cars, and motorcycles converge on the chemical plant. The guards come out of the gatehouse as police vehicles gather at the gate. Inside the accounting department, a gang member uses the welder to burn into the lock on the safe. Outside, policemen and treasury agents dash through the gates of the factory. Cotton, standing guard outside the accounting building, gapes as he sees policemen moving toward him. Inside, Cody watches his men work on the safe. Creel walks toward him, then freezes as he sees Fallon's face. Fallon's jaw drops as Creel glares at him. Fallon quickly turns his back.
Hey, Cody, that guy's a copper. He's a T-man. I know him. His name is Fallon.
Cody glances at Fallon.
Yeah, he pinched me 4 years ago.
Fallon grabs a shotgun and points it at Cody.
Don't go for your guns.
Cody turns and stares at him, his face twisting into a snarl.
Cop. A cop. What do you like, that boys? A cop. And his name is Fallon. And we went for it. I went for it. Treated him like a kid brother. And I was going to split 50-50 with a copper. Maybe they're waiting to pin a medal on him.
Solid gold. Come on, get up. Get your hands up.
In the hall behind Fallon, Cotton approaches.
A nice gold medal for the copper. Only maybe he's going to get it sooner than he thinks.
Cotton pistol whips Fallon from behind. Cody kicks the shotgun away.
Cody, the joint's crawling with cops.
Fallon, on his knees, holds his head. Cody races to the window. Outside, Evans leads a rushing crowd of Treasury agents and policemen toward the office building.
Let him have it.
Oh, no. And lose our ace in the hole? He's going to walk us out of here. Ain't you, copper? Get up!
It won't work, Cody. They'll shoot just the same.
They won't shoot one of their own.
They won't make any deals.
You better pray that they do.
Garrett, you and your men might as well give up.
Cody grabs the shotgun.
Come out with your hands up.
He hurries to the window.
We've got your boy Fallon in here, and he'll be all right if you do as I say.
A police officer leads Verna to Evans.
She says she can get Garrett to come out.
If I can, mister, will you go easy on me? I'll tell him you'll let him get away because you don't want your guy hurt. He'll believe me. And when he comes out, you can do what you want with him.
No deal. Lock her up.
Cheap copper.
Garrett, you haven't got a chance. Come out with your hands up.
Come out with your hands up, the man says. How do you like that, Ma? Here's my answer, you dirty...
Give him the tear gas
on
both sides.
That was Cody Jarrett talking!
A half dozen policemen aim tear gas rifles at the building. Tear gas canisters shatter the windows. A blinding smoke spreads through the office. The men stagger about as the gas fills the room.
Out this way, Cody.
Fallon ducks, and Cody's shotgun blasts Cotton in the back. He falls as the gang members run out of the room. Fallon crawls on his hands and knees through the billowing smoke. He holds a handkerchief to his face and staggers toward the door. He pushes open the door and crawls outside. A policeman next to Evans aims his rifle.
Where is Fallon?
Evans shoves the rifle barrel aside. Fallon runs staggering past the tanker truck toward the network of oil pipelines that the lawmen use for cover. He crawls through an opening between the pipes. Evans helps him to his feet.
You all right, Hank? Yeah, sure, quick. Get a car out to Charlie's Roadhouse, Highway 60 near Colton. Pick up Daniel Winston. He's the big guy you're looking for, you fence.
Frank?
Now, inside the building.
What's out here, Bull?
An alley.
Hey, Happy, try it. Come on! Get going.
Cody shoves Happy and Head out the door. They sprint away from the building. Machine gun fire mows them down. Cody and his men run back through the tear gas-filled halls. They hurry up a spiral staircase as the T-men and police close in. Cody follows Creel across the roof of the building with Riley and Reeder trailing. They hurry up a ladder and onto a platform surrounded by pipelines. They duck behind a shed where Creel hands Cody the shotgun. Below them, the lawmen race through the chemical plant. Cody cocks the rifle and aims at a group of advancing policemen. A policeman drops. Cody turns and sees another group racing through the factory. Another cop falls and the others dive for cover. Cody aims again, but the rifle's empty. He tosses it away and gestures for his men to run. A policeman raises his gun. He picks off Creel. The others leave him and race up a scaffold. Fallon leads a dozen cops after them.
We've got Bo Creel. They're heading up.
Cody leads his men higher. A T-man aims his rifle. Reeder falls backward, tumbling down the stairs. Riley follows Cody onto a platform. They see the cops closing in on them. Cody unlatches a safety chain, and he and Riley pocket their guns. Cody hops onto a fire pole and Riley follows. They slide down and hit the ground running. Cody and Riley race across the factory floor, a half dozen police hot on their heels. They duck around a corner and scan the grounds. They sprint desperately through the factory as night falls. Fallon barks into a walkie-talkie as he races after them.
Got him on the ground heading to the Horton Spear area. Send men out to that section.
Elsewhere, Evans lowers his walkie-talkie and nods to his men. They move out. Cody and Riley dash across the road toward a field of spherical storage tanks. Evans motions for the lawmen to halt. They gaze through the falling darkness as Cody and Riley hop a fence and race between silver tanks the size of hot air balloons.
All right, pass the word along. Don't fire unless you've got a perfect target. That place is a stack of dynamite.
Cody motions for Riley to follow him. They hop over a railing and drop to the ground under a tank, guns drawn.
Have that area surrounded. Get some searchlights.
Cody and Riley watch as police cars and motorcycle officers surround the tank field. Riley nervously scratches his head with his gun barrel as more lawmen race to the field. Evans and Fallon watch as the searchlights beam off the storage tanks. Cody and Riley duck as a searchlight's beam sweeps past them. Cody raises his head, a maniacal grin on his face.
They think they've got Cody Jarrett. They haven't got Cody Jarrett. Yeah, they haven't got him. And I want to show you. They haven't got him. Come on. Come with me.
Cody races up the stairs, curving around the outside of a tank. Riley sits below, watching him dash up to a platform on top of the tank. Cody ducks behind some pipes. Riley's brow furrows as the searchlight beams glimmer across the tanks. A beam passes over him, and he stands up and throws his hands in the air.
Don't shoot! It's me, Riley! I'm coming out! Don't shoot!
Riley slowly walks away from the tanks toward the lawman, his arms raised. Cody watches, his eyes bulging madly. He aims his pistol at Riley's back. Riley collapses. Cody ducks back behind the pipes. Evans raises a megaphone.
You might as well come down, Jarrett. There's no one left but you.
Come and get me!
Cody's wild eyes bulge. He bites his lip as he grins savagely.
Get the gun, Hank.
The policemen pass a rifle with a scope to Fallon. He aims the rifle at the tank field and searches through the scope. He locks onto his target. Cody shivers as the bullet tears into him. He staggers forward. Fallon trains his rifle on him again. Cody staggers but remains on his feet. He fires back.
What's holding him up?
Fallon cocks the rifle. Hit again, Cody drops to his knees. He crawls across the platform. As Cody climbs to his feet, Fallon aims again. Before he can shoot, Cody turns and fires wildly. The bullet tears into a storage tank and a plume of fire spews out. Cody fires wildly again and more flames leap from the tank as the lawmen run for cover. A gigantic fireball explodes from the tank. Another tank blows, and flames fill the nighttime sky. Evans and Fallon watch the raging firestorm.
Cody Jarrett. He finally got to the top of the world. It blew right up in his face.
Another tank explodes. Flames fill our view. A title appears. The End. A Warner Brothers First National Picture. Fade to black.